Blog Talk Radio.
Network of David Duenas. I'm your host, Steve Canine Kim, and joining me, all as always, from the beautiful city of San Francisco, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Mr. Montoya, good Monday to you.
A good Monday to you, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It was a big weekend in Southern California for boxing. It was the West Coast debut of one Gennady Golovkin. Let's get through the pleasantries. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We'll go to those calls in about 15 to 20 minutes. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you could do so at SteveUCNLive or Gabriel_Montoya. Let's get started with round number one. It was Mexican style from a sold-out StubHub Center in Carson, California, brought to you by HBO. For the WBA Super Middleweight title, Gennady Golovkin improves to 31-0, notching his 18th straight stoppage and his 28th overall, stopping Marco Antonio Rubio in two short rounds. And the semi-main for the WBA featherweight title, the Axeman chops down Nonito Donaire. It was Nicholas Walters bursting onto the scene. He now goes to 25-0, scoring his 21st knockout. Donaire, the Filipino Flash, now drops to 33-3. Doug, we knew Golovkin was going to dominate. We figured that much. He certainly was the guy that crushed Rubio probably hardest since he was iced by Kobe Jantu a long time ago in a different lifetime. How much credit do you give Golovkin for this particular victory, given the fact that oddsmakers had this fight at 70-1?
I think, you know, this is sound like Lance Armstrong's book, It's Not About the Bike. It's not about the opponent. I think it's about what Gennady brings. You know, they went to a big market. You know, the Southern California Mexican-American is gold, you know, for boxing. And they did record numbers. Like you pointed out, when Oscar was on the stadium, he did more with Forbes. But, you know, that was also towards the end of his career. This is Gennady, you know, kind of starting to ascend here and setting records, and people didn't really seem to care. They made a good time of it. You know, our friend Ernie was talking about how it was one of the, you know, the biggest, the best boxing tailgates he'd ever seen. So it really wasn't. I don't think Rubio was the point. I think it was more showing that, and probably a more important statement, that Gennady doesn't really need the opponent. He brings something to the table at this point, or is starting to.
You know what was amazing, Gabe? The most striking thing that I observed, other than the actual crowd, and it was announced at 93-23, and it looked every bit of that. It really did. That was the largest contingent of fans I've ever seen inside the tennis stadium, was the fact that I would say that crowd, Gabe, was at least two-thirds Mexican, Mexican-American, and Latino. And when Golovkin came inside the ring, you would have thought it was light-skinned Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. I mean, it might as well have been Gennady Gomez Gonzalez, because he was treated as one of their own. And right before the first bell was about to ring, after everything had settled down, after Michael Buffer had done his job, everyone had cleared the ring, there was this Triple G chant, and I just happened to look outside the audience to see who exactly was doing it. They were Mexicans that had Mexican flags in hand with that chant. And this is against a Mexican fighter. And we know Mexican fans, Gabe. We've been around them for a very long time. They're very parochial. They're incredibly loyal. And listen, I'm not saying that Rubio is a Chavez. He's not a Barrera. He's not an Eric Morales. But I never thought I'd see the day when a Mexican fan base would en masse root so openly against a Mexican fighter. That, to me, was the highlight of the weekend. I think that's where Gennady Golovkin scored his real victory. That we don't know what his fan base is because he's Kazakh. And on the East Coast, he's had sporadic success, and they've grown that a little bit to the credit of Tom Loeffler. But I get the sense that Gennady Golovkin, this particular weekend, Gabe, became a West Coast fighter.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very specific market, the Southern California Mexican, a Mexican American. They're steeped in, they love their sports. You know, they love their USC. At least that's my family's big on USC. But it's, you know, it's Dodgers, it's Lakers. If you're, you know, my family, it's Rams. My family was in SoCal like the 50s when the Rams were there. Still remain Rams fans. But you also got Raiders fans too, you know, because they were in LA. And I think, you know, Gennady is a winning brand. And I think that's more than, you know, and he's also just, it's the universal language of love for boxing. He's aggressive. He's efficient. I think he's very subtle. I think he's underrated. And people that look at him and say, well, you know, quick athletic fighters are going to give him trouble. I mean, they give everybody trouble. But the subtle things he does, the way he parries shots, kind of puts his hands out. He blocks in different ways. He'll catch it with his hands. He'll let it slide off him. He'll put his arms up in kind of a frame that makes your hands glide where he doesn't want you to be. Kind of beautiful at the end of the first round, the way he can offensively pick two lanes, you know, hit you, you know, with a jab and then a hook off of it, slide underneath, and then hit you perfectly with the right hand, and getting full leverage on every shot. He doesn't waste anything. You know, Rubio, I don't think anybody was going to adopt the guy. I don't think anybody thought he had a shot. And it was kind of disgraceful that he showed up overweight for the fight. Seems to be a trend coming out of that gym. But I think more than anything, people are – yeah, that's a strong boxing fan base, and they're going to adopt a winner and a guy that seems like a genuine good guy who trains not near, you know, not too far away in Big Bear. He's kind of established himself as a SoCal brand. It's a beautiful thing to see. It's very healthy for boxing.
And by the way, this guy says all the right things, even if it's in the wrong way. No one can do the classic malaprop quite like Gennady Golovkin since Yogi Berra. And I thought it was absolute genius. And I guess Abel Sanchez put him up to doing this, that after the fight, then he breaks out his fifth language, Spanish. And I said, boy, they get it. They really understand how to pander to the audience. Mm-hmm. Going back to what you said, Gabe, I think there is a lot of subtleties that are unknown and underrated and unappreciated as it relates to Gennady Golovkin. I mean, if this was a dark-skinned Cuban, no one would be ignoring or forgetting about this prodigious amateur record. You don't go 355-5 without knowing how to play both offense and defense. And one of the things that you mentioned that I noticed specifically in this fight is the front side armbar of Golovkin. Golovkin doesn't necessarily do a straight forearm or what you'd call, what do you call it in football, the straight arm. He actually bars his arm and his shoulders. And you're right, he basically blunts the front side of the attack of any guy he faces just by putting his arms at a certain angle and holding a guy off. And I've studied this a lot based on some of the stuff Ray Mancini has told me. Gennady Golovkin does as good a job of planting and setting his feet for both offense and defense and then positioning his legs in a way that put him out of harm's way while still being in punching distance as well as any fighter. And I believe that there are too many fans and observers who believe unless you're skating around the ring like you're on roller skates, that you're not defensively sound. Now, is Golovkin going to get hit? Yes, with that particular style, Gabe, it's almost impossible not to have leather touch you. If you wanted to run around the ring like Derek Gaynor circa 2003, Gabe, a lot of fighters wouldn't get touched at that point.
I think, you know, he understands where he wants to be hit, you know, where it's okay for him to be hit. And he didn't seem like he got hit all that much in this fight. It was very subtle. And, you know, Rubio is kind of a perfect guy to bang on. I mean, even heard, at least on the British telecast, you know, Abel Sanchez telling Golovkin between rounds, just practice for a while, and then we'll do what we want to do to get him out of here. That's all this was with Rubio, was just a guy to kind of mark some time, plant your flag in a new market. And, you know, it's kind of a beautiful thing. I remember when, you know, Floyd Mayweather derided Cotto as being just a regional draw. Gennady's showing that he is a bicoastal draw, and he's also able to bring it in Monaco. He is being a world champion. He's fighting in different spots and fighting regularly. It's going to have to be, you know, I don't think he's going to get what he's looking for in this division. I think he can maybe clean it up. Maybe somebody will fight him, but I don't think the Heyman guys will. I was kind of thinking about it that, you know, generally a guy kind of ascends to superstardom as he moves up and starts taking more chances against bigger names in other divisions above him. And maybe that's where things lie for Triple Jesus.
Here's what I think. I think 2015, Gabe, will be all about Gennady Golovkin basically shaming guys into dropping the belts as he puts them in mandatory positions and box-offs. The various sanctioning bodies, like for instance, the WBC, is now the interim champion. After Miguel Cotto, whether it's Canelo Alvarez or not, the next fight, he will be the mandatory. I get the sense Cotto will not fight him, and he's going to drop the belt and move back down to 54. Within the WBA, he's a quote-unquote super champion. So if Danny Jacobs is the regular champion, I talked to someone at the WBA last week. They're going to start consolidating their own titles. So if Danny Jacobs wants to hide behind Al Heyman, well, he could do what Peter Krohn did and drop the belt. And I believe that Khorlamov Lee, the reason why HBO is buying that fight, is with the express intent that whoever holds the WBO belt, they will be in a unification slot against Gennady Golovkin. And this is my personal opinion. Should he move up? I don't know. But I will say this. There have been other middleweight champions, Marvin Hagler and Bernard Hopkins, who at one time were in the same spot as Gennady Golovkin. They didn't get the big fights. They were overlooked. A lot of people called them underrated or overrated, depending on your perspective. But as far as I'm concerned, he has every single right to stay in a division and have every opportunity to clean it up. Now, with that said, I think the issue is, can he get a big dance partner next year? My gut feel is, Gabe, since they're going to fight four times next year, they're going to return to Monaco, it looks like, in February. I get the sense, looking at the way the chess pieces are playing out on the board, if he gets that fight, I think it's going to be in the latter half of 2015. Because, Gabe, I think he took a big step this weekend, but he's still not all the way there.
I want to see him get hit by somebody. I'd like to see him in with, you know, with a Murray. I'd love to see, you know, him in with Chavez. I think that would just be a brutal fight. I just don't think Chavez can get down to weight. I think that would be just kind of a whatever Chavez can make weight kind of fight. It'll happen for him. I just think it was interesting on the British telecast. They mentioned that, you know, is he going to go for, you know, Hagler's mark, you know, of defenses with the WBA belt. I think it's going to take some sort of kind of longevity. Right now, Cotto, why would he fight him? You know, he's not really he's a franchise, and he can move around. He can get down to 54. There's no need to fight Triple G, and I don't think anybody should blame him for that. He kind of, you know, he fought a smaller middleweight champion to get that title. It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, what people brought up Andre Ward immediately, by people I mean Max Kellerman. What do you think about that fight? Can it even be talked about? And who really brings what to that table?
Well, here's the harsh economic reality now for Andre Ward. I think Golovkin has passed him up as a draw. So now you come back to the actual negotiating of the fight. Who is the A side? Gabe, I was at Andre Ward's fight last year in Ontario, and it was dreary. There couldn't have been more than 3,000 to 3,500 people, and it was boring. There was an electricity inside that venue this past weekend where I said to myself, there's a phenomenon here. I don't know how great Golovkin is. I hope we get to find out very soon. But Andre Ward, like Chavez, Mikey Garcia, and James Kirkland, I think they're going to find out when they walk back through that HBO door, hat in hand, after they've run out of money, that their place in the pecking order, Gabe, may not be guaranteed to be what it once was. And I love what Tom Loeffler has done with this whole situation. Instead of doing your classic TV packaging where you beg for fights and you bitch and you whine and you moan, all they've done in concert with the fighter who wants to stay busy is to build their own brand through sheer activity and real marketing and promoting.
Yes.
And guess what? He's not the A side against Cotto or Canelo, but he's certainly not going to be treated like Sergio Martinez was this past summer. And as it relates to Andre Ward, who is a great talent but has stagnated, you could absolutely, Gabe, in my opinion, make the argument the A-side is the guy from Kazakhstan.
Yeah, I would wonder about that fight. Like, you know, we talk about, you know, he's in the Mexican market. I think it should be, you know, and Dave and I were talking about this morning, it's the SoCal Mexican market. When he faces a Mexican legitimate superstar, who are they going to root for? I think in the case of Chavez Jr., because he's almost kind of wearing, like, the black hat. He's the kid that, you know, everybody thinks had a silver spoon in his mouth, handed everything, and he doesn't seem to really want it all that much. I think people would be rooting for Triple G in that one. It'd be a hell of a fight.
You know what's funny? I guess Chavez on Twitter was talking about how he's the poster child for mistreated fighters. I don't follow him, and I've gotten to a point where I've kind of tuned him out. Chavez complaining about the mistreatment of boxers or how life is unfair, that is akin to that high school kid that bitches about his parents living in that mansion that for his first brand new car at age 18, instead of getting him a Porsche, those parents only got him a Lexus. I hate you. I hate you. Life is so unfair. Because that is Chavez. He's the trust fund baby of boxers. And I think there's a tone deafness to him. He lacks a self-awareness. And I'm telling you, when you walked around that venue this past weekend, you saw these Mexicans with the T-shirts like Mexicans for Golovkin and these other bootleg You Can't Touch This T-shirts of the month. You're saying to yourself, there's a real cottage industry here with Golovkin that the Mexicans are looking for a hope. They're looking for a hero, and if Canelo's going to continue to be unproven to a certain degree and maybe protected, and Chavez Jr. continues to act like, well, himself, you know what? Bandwagons are very, very easy to jump on, because the last I checked, there have been no Mexicans that have ever played for the Lakers. When the Lakers win a title, you go out to East L.A., there are Laker flags all over the place on almost every single car. Gabe, all hail the Axeman. He absolutely chopped down Nonito Donaire. And, Gabe, I thought it was interesting last week at Media Day. Doug Fisher flat out said, he goes, Steve, you lobbed him a softball question. Do you have the same motivation for boxing that you did 3-4 years ago? And he said, no. I knew right then he really had no chance, because this – I don't want to be cliche about it, but this truly was a battle of a fighter that was content, maybe complacent, had plateaued the last couple of years against a hungry young lion in Nicholas Walters.
Oof. I mean, you know, he fought to me like a guy that the clock was ticking a little bit. Kind of reminded me of Oscar against Felix Sturm. Kind of gets right in there and starts kind of trying to dig away and land the home run punch and get out of there. He didn't do anything to, talking about Donaire, he didn't get behind the jab or stay behind the jab. He started with it, but it went away really quick, and I think that was one of the big differences in the fight. I think the other is that Nonito is not a featherweight. He should be at 122, but that desire, I guess, equates to the 4 pounds and a soft body. I think it was Christina Poncher or somebody had retweeted that Donaire said that he had never worked harder, that this is the toughest training camp. And that generally means that it wasn't, and that's not what I heard. And it certainly didn't feel like that in the fight. He fell apart rather quickly. The jab of Walters beat him down pretty fast, and the power differential, I know he hurt Walters at the end of the second round, but he kind of caught Walters coming in being overly aggressive, and the guy quickly began to take the shots better and better, and it was pretty quickly over for Donaire. Hard to say where he goes from here. If he doesn't have the desire, what does the loss do to you?
Gabe, I thought, and again, I don't want to take too much away from Donaire. He's had a very storied career, very lucrative. But I thought in a lot of ways that his career was built upon very favorable and intelligent matchmaking by his management, Cameron Duncan, and his promoter, Top Rank. And the two times they fought real guys, he kind of got exposed to a certain degree. Not only was Walters bigger and stronger, so not only did he get out-strength or out-sized, Gabe, from a pure technical standpoint, he was out-fundamentaled. Nicholas Walters' jab, I thought, was the dominant factor, and that's one of my big problems with Donaire. For all his flash, he lacked certain fundamentals, and the right side of his face was really blown up and reddened and scarred by the end of the third round, because he kept running in to that good, solid telephone pole jab. He was much more comfortable on the inside, was the Jamaican. And you got the sense that with Donaire, like his other fights, the first 9 minutes, Gabe, he's very dangerous. He's like that rocket ship that blasts off. But as the fight settled in and he was able to survive that second round late onslaught with that lethal left hook, You saw what happened. The rest of the fight, he was getting ground down consistently by Nicholas Walters. He was either going to get knocked down in the sixth by one big punch, or he was going to take a beating for another 18 minutes. So I think the betting lines kind of reflected that. The insiders, by the time this fight went on, Gabe, Walters was the favorite.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, when the fight was signed, I picked Walters by stoppage. I thought it would be later. I thought it would be on the stool as things progressed. But I had no doubt. I just didn't feel that Donaire physically could handle what the Axeman was bringing. That long reach, and just he never forgot to use the jab. It was a very clear plan. And I think because you look at the Rigondeaux fight, Rigo has to box and be safe because he's really like an 18 fighting at a higher weight. In Walter's case, like you pointed out, he looks like a 40 on fight night. That gets down to a 126 and then rehydrates. He was just a bigger, stronger guy, and I agree with you. I don't think Nonito quit. I think he was just done. He had run out of ideas. He'd been getting outboxed. He gets put down. Then he starts to kind of move away. That's not working. He closed the gap. That really then it puts him in a position where he's trying to body up against a much bigger man, and the end was coming. And he just gets caught in an exchange that he shouldn't have been in. It was almost like a kamikaze move at the end. Like, look, we're just going to, go out guns blazing. It was an honorable fight from the guy, but I do wonder, as you're getting into these higher weight classes and you have to use different tricks and for the first time have to be in an even fight or even really a fight that you kind of realize maybe, Top Rank was, building this other guy and not really so much looking at you anymore, kind of cashing you out in a sense. You've got to put more work in as you get older and have to deal with these guys. And it seems like Donaire isn't. So I don't know
Gabe,
where he
if
goes.
You look, Gabe, if you look at the last generation of fighters that have won multiple weight classes and different titles as they move up north, obviously the size dissipates. The power is lessened. But the guys that have been able to do it, off the top of my head, James Toney, Roy Jones, Oscar De La Hoya, Manny Pacquiao, they were either technically sound and fundamentally grounded, or they improved like a Manny Pacquiao. Nonito Donaire, you take away that big left hook, and if he doesn't land that lightning bolt early on, he runs out of ideas. I've always said, and I remember writing an article, this was about 3 years ago, when Sergio Martinez struggled against Darren Barker, who I thought was mediocre, and Nonito Donaire absolutely stuck out the joint against Omar Narvaez. I basically said, this is why pound for pound list should basically right now consist of two guys, either Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao, or you could flip them. But there really is no third and fourth guys, because if those are the third and fourth best guys, like most people had it, I said boxing is in deep trouble, because I thought both Martinez and Donaire were not only very unusual and awkward, I thought they were very flawed guys. And one guy, as his knee gave out, fell apart. One guy, as he moved up in weight and his commitment to the sport lessened, every single technical flaw started to become very, very evident. Gabe, before we move on to some of the tweets and we hit the phone lines, news and notes. This news came out today on various websites, the Kevin Ioli, Dan Rayfield reporting this. December 6th, HBO Barclays Center. They will be doing a show, Golden Boy, and it'll be Gabe Rosado against David Lemieux. And I was told later on in the day at the press conference out here in Hollywood, Hugo Centeno takes on James De La Rosa. Gabe, Rosado Lemieux, thumbs up or thumbs down?
Oh, I love that fight. I think that's going to be a really fun fight, man. I lean towards Lemieux. I like the power, but Rosado's fighting really well. He can move. He can box. I'm curious. Lemieux has been on a win streak and kind of putting things back together. I just, with him, it's always been about discipline and consistency. We know he can whack, and we know Rosado can be gotten to. So I think this is a really, really fun, intriguing matchup that either guy could win.
You know, if I'm Gabe Rosado, I understand Lemieux gets out of the starting block really quickly. I make it an absolute imperative that I get to the middle rounds. And the other thing that concerns me for Rosado, he's really a natural 54 that's grown into a middleweight, although I don't think size is a concern. The real concern is, Gabe, he cuts a lot, and there's a lot of scar tissue there. And the one thing about David Lemieux, he has a very, very heavy set of hands. And then also, Gabe, December 13th, we don't know where this show is going to be, but it's obvious Showtime and HBO are going to have dueling shows this night. But I'm sorry, Gabe. Alexander Kahn, that's just the very definition of blah to me in 2014. that fight does nothing for me right now.
Alexander Kahn, you know, okay, it has a high potentiality for suckage. That's true. Just like, Charlo Andrade. And that fight, to me, like, it reminds me, both guys are undercooked. Like, in Alexander Bradley was at least experienced, knew how to grind it out. Alexander, I think, was not experienced enough and only knew how to win against guys that were complicit. So it made for and it was just a funky style, and it just didn't make for a good matchup. Khan isn't really in bad fights. It's pretty rare that, you know, he'll put in a bad, shaky performance, but it's kind of exciting because he might get knocked out or some guys, you know, putting it on Americana a little bit. Alexander, I think, is kind of coming into his own despite what, you know, how the fights have been going. He's starting to learn how to sit down and be a hard-nosed professional. I think Khan could get stopped in this fight. I think it's boring if Amir decides he doesn't want to engage and kind of just stays away. I think it has the potential to be an intriguing fight. I do.
I think that if Amir Khan does what he's instructed to by Virgil Hunter, I think his feet are simply too fleet and quick and fast for Devin Alexander, and I think the clinch count for this is going to set a lot of records. Also on that show is reportedly Demetrius Andrade against one of the Charlo brothers, and I guess Keith Thurman maybe fighting Leonardo Bundu. Although I was told by Eric Gomez today, nothing is set. I think this is being talked about. I think it's being negotiated. But as of right now, nothing is finalized. Let's get to a couple of tweets before at the phone line. This is from the president, Andrew V. Kennedy. With the way things are going, does it seem like Ward will quote-unquote need GGG more than GGG needs him? Gabe, I don't think that's the wackiest thing ever said here.
Well, you know, I think you look at trends in the sport, and like Tito had to kind of fight for where he got to. You know, Oscar had that great story coming out of the Olympics, built into a really great brand, and he was the guy to chase. Tito had to really win and win spectacularly. Didn't speak English. He had kind of it's a similar style in some senses, without the with more vulnerability. Trinidad to Golovkin. So they had to be spectacular and exciting, and the brand, the style spoke for itself. I think with Ward, you know, he had his chance. Like, he had his run to make those statements and be exciting, and instead he's the brand that we call Andre Ward, which most people are kind of bored by. It's technical. It takes other people's styles away. But, you know, we saw his fight against Abraham at the Home Depot Center. It wasn't sold out, needless to say. It wasn't very exciting. And the Super 6 final was in an empty ballroom, or a half-empty ballroom. He had his chance to run and to turn the public on. So to answer the question, no, I think he does need a guy like Gennady Golovkin, particularly if he doesn't want to move up to 175, where there's a bunch of opponents that would be great for him to fight.
Gabe, here's another issue then, and this thing just irks my nerve, as Cool Mo D once said. If they want to fight, why does Golovkin have to move up? I mean, does everyone have to kowtow to Andre Ward? I mean, didn't Chad Dawson basically drop a lot of pounds to face him at his weight? Well, then why doesn't he face Golovkin at 160? I'm still trying to figure out, what is the rush to move up Gennady Golovkin here? Why?
Right.
Why is there such a double standard? When Andre Ward said, well, I can face Mayweather at 160, okay, then face Golovkin there too. That to me, the double standard that certain fans want to have, where Ward has made it clear along with his trainer, well, we can't get anyone to face us at 160, and we simply will not move up. So literally, my point is, what is the rush with everyone trying to act like Tom Loeffler to move up Gennady Golovkin when he's perfectly fine fighting there? And at the end of the day, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. He fought Chad Dawson at his weight. A guy that had not fought at that weight for about 7-8 years was made to go down. Well, how come what comes around doesn't go around?
Well, I think it makes more sense for Andre Ward to move up to 175 to face all the names that are available up there than to stay at 68 and kind of keep fighting the guys that he's already fought or not fight Andre Durrell. And it makes, you know, even less sense for Gennady to move to 168 to fight one guy. I think, you know, there's other fights that are exciting for him at 68. Carl Froch would be great. George Groves would be really fun. But those are also kind of conquered frontiers in a sense. I don't think Froch really wants anything to do with Triple G. He can fill out, you know, Wembley. He doesn't need to be doing it facing Triple G. That's again another established franchise that's earned it. So I think but the bottom line is that Ward has litigation going on. He isn't really a viable opponent in any regard until that goes away, and it doesn't seem like it is going away.
Here's a tweet from Brian Battaglia. My buddy wants Walters versus Rigondeaux. Pipe dream. I say too little reward for too much risk. Thoughts? Bring on Gradovich. Gabe, here's the issue as it relates to Rigondeaux. There are a lot of harsh feelings between him and Top Rank, who he's no longer associated with. Top Rank knows how difficult he is. Here's the thing. I don't think that fight's a possibility, because if you have Nicholas Walters, like Aram's company does, you're not in a rush to feed him to a guy that just left you. That's the reality.
Yeah, it's true. You know, I just think, although I don't know, you know, if I'm Nicholas Walters, maybe I do want to face a guy like Rigo that I've got a size advantage on. Maybe they can, you know, they could overwhelm Rigo. But again, it's a risky fight for a little reward. I mean, beating Rigo, I guess, gives you props, but I think he would look like a midget next to Walters. I think people would deride the fight, you know, to be honest.
Here's a fight
Lomachenko, but I think
the Lomachenko fight's always going to be there, given the fact they're with Top Rank. And obviously, Gradovich brings a hard-nosed, fan-friendly style. But with the way this game is opening up in certain avenues with the Cold War, today at the press conference, some of the power brokers, in an off-the-record conversation, we were all kind of just sitting around talking. You know a name that's being brought up for Nicholas Walters, and I'd have absolutely no hesitation in plunking down my own money to make this fight and watching it? Nicholas Walters, Johnny Gonzalez. Sign me up for some of that, Gabe.
That's a hell of a fight. That's a fun fight. I think it's a shootout. You know, maybe even, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't want to wait. I'd love to see that next. What about throwing Rocky Juarez into the mix?
The thing about Rocky, he had a very good victory, a little bit long in the tooth, but you're right, Rocky Juarez is the type of guy, if you're going to fight him in Texas, he still has some popularity there. Again, Nicholas Walters, before people start saying the word star and all that other stuff, listen, he's still a Jamaican. There hasn't been a Jamaican world champion in a long time. I don't even know if Jamaica still has professional boxing on a regular basis over there. I think there's still some building to be there. What he has certainly established for himself is a place on HBO, and that in itself is very important. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. And let us know, if you went out to Mexican style, were you satisfied? Would you do it all over again to watch Gennady Golovkin live? Gabe, let's hit the phone lines.
In the 209, you're live on the next round. 209. All right, first knockdown. Boom. Coming out the gate like Nicholas Walters. In the 303, you're live on the next round. 303.
In the we may not last as long as Rubio here.
Seriously. 480, you're live on the next round. I'm not hearing anything. Everybody seems to be on hold. Hello, there. 480.
Yes, who is this?
It's Adrian. What's up, guys?
What's going on? What can we do for you?
Sorry, I got a little bit of feedback. No, I was just listening in, but you know what? I do want to give my opinion on the on Mexican style. I thought it was great. I didn't go to it. I live in Phoenix, but it is getting kind of little. It just sucks. I love Triple G, but it sucks seeing guys only last, like, less than five rounds. You know, I want to see Triple G go a lot more rounds, man, and it's not his fault. I'm a big Triple G fan. It would just be nice to see a couple of guys just step up. Like, I don't know. I actually don't know. Maybe David Lemieux, the winner of Lemieux, Rosado. I wouldn't mind seeing a rematch if Rosado's up to it. I just want to see somebody. I don't know how you guys feel.
You know, I don't disagree. I think you can get away with this for a little while longer, given the fact that I think most fans are cognizant of the politics surrounding the sport of boxing. And I think there's a novelty here. This was the first time he'd been on the West Coast. There was a very good co-feature attached to it, which a knockout. But I agree with you. There's going to come a point in time where even people are going to be very, I don't want to say bored, but they're going to say, geez, if I want to spend this type of money, I would like to see at least 7 or 8 minutes of action and not just 4.5.
Yeah. Yeah, it would suck to have, like, if you were only there to see Triple G and then you only see 2 rounds of them, that's the only thing that sucks, man. But it's Triple G doing his thing, man. It's either he, you know, makes Rubio, you know, takes him on a lot longer, and then people start discrediting him, you know, like, oh, why did he go rounds with a bum like Rubio? Or he just took care of him like he did, you know, and he still does his thing, and then he fights again in February.
Gabe, isn't that the issue, though? When you face a 70-1 underdog, whether that's fair or not, that is the ultimate no-win situation.
Well, I think it's also a good gauge of how good he is. You know, I mean, I've liked Gennady for a long time. I remember Julian Kazdin, one of the first guys I knew in boxing, like around the boxing writers from Doghouse. He's a really good eye for all the European fighters and his quality. I remember early on him telling me about this guy, and I could never remember his name because it was funky. And you watch him develop. I think sometimes it's not who you face, but how you face them. You know, Rubio was 10 years ago. He got stopped in 30 seconds by just a left hand. You know, his first time in Vegas. It was just kind of welcome to Las Vegas boxing. He gets caught with that left hook and knocked out cold, or pretty, you know, as close to it as you can. And, you know, he's had a nice career since then. But, you know, he gets blown out in two. I thought it would be four. There was a lot of people, you know, making Lekowicz, Chancellor Lekowicz's son, saying, don't be surprised, he's going to give a lot of trouble to Triple G. And it just didn't go that way. I mean, I'd like to see more rounds, you know, but, you know, at the same time, if he's gonna perform this way, perform like Tyson and just brutalize people and get on SportsCenter, keep building momentum, because eventually people can't. I mean, Floyd doesn't even say his name because Floyd would get murdered by Triple G. I think that speaks volumes. He's becoming the guy, the most dangerous guy in the sport, if it isn't already. Sergey Kovalev might have that title as well. I think everything he's doing right now is just, it's just the nature of building a star.
Is there anything else we could do for you?
I just wanted to say one last thing. Nicholas Walters, welcome to fucking HBO Big Time Boxing, man. I can't wait to see this guy a lot more often.
Absolutely. I think you will. I think he's a player. I'm not saying he's unbeatable, but I think he's a formidable featherweight. Thanks for the call. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. And, Gabe, another thing that was notable – outside the Mexican partisans that dominated that crowd, walking around the venue and doing some of the pregame festivities and meeting fans inside the arena, you shake hands with them, they introduce you, they introduce themselves to you. I met people that came all the way from Virginia, Canada, Iowa, Arizona, D.C., drove 8-9 miles from Northern California. This really is a phenomenon. Again, I'm not saying that Gennady Golovkin is the most popular fighter in the world. I'm not saying he's the best fighter in the world. But put this in perspective, Gabe, 2 years ago as he fought in Verona on Labor Day weekend against Gregor Praska, nobody really knew who he was. And I think this is where we have to speak to the job that Tom Loeffler has done in really guiding him. I think this is one of the most brilliant jobs of marketing and promoting an individual fighter in years.
Yeah, it really is. To take a fighter like this, it was kind of a – I mean, he's a blue-chip prospect, about as blue-chip as you get, but he's gotten a little long in the tooth. His managerial or promotional issues kind of kept him on the sidelines. And they're making a nice run at it. They're really – you know, I think maybe even that timeout was nice rest for him, and they're able to go hard. They're picking the right guys, and he's taking advantage of it. And I think, you know, it's not just what Tom's doing, and I think, it, you know, it speaks to also Gennady's professionalism, Sanchez's guidance, the way they're able to get him in shape and keep him in shape. There's a consistency to what they do, and they know that, you know, they just keep fighting and keep staying sharp. Eventually, you know, he's gonna chop down the tree. I think, you know, within the next year, he's gonna get that shot at maybe another champion or another name within the division. Somebody's gonna take the shot or be forced to, and then we'll see what he's really made of. I want to see him get punched in the face for more than just like a couple shots, you know.
I just love the fact he says next year I'm fighting four times. That's the edict of Tom Loeffler. And there's an old saying, you can't hit the baseball with the bat on your shoulders or if you're on the bench. I think that's a lesson for a lot of other fighters to heed. 347-215-7598, that's the number. In a couple of segments, we'll have some news and notes, take a look at some of the other action on NBC Sports and other news tidbits from the world of boxing. Gabe, who's next on the line?
602, you're live on the next round. 602. Everybody is in mute.
We're scoring more knockdowns than Golovkin. Jeez.
Yeah, this is, wow. How about the 111 number? You're live on the next round.
Oof. Wow, they're going down like flies, Gabe.
This is like, yeah, wow, this is brutal. 319, you're live on the next round.
Oh, actually, mm-hmm. I was just listening in. This is Warren, oh. Dub Dub.
Warren, well, hold on. What's going on, Warren? What's the latest?
Not too much. I've just been, following some of the recent action. I did have an email I sent you a while back and about Floyd, and I was wondering if any of the other listeners or Gabe had, noticed that it seemed like he's completely melting down and kind of cutting off everybody that used to support him, even Stephen A. Smith.
Warren, you know what I find interesting? Someone told me that I needed to read a book called Emperor Jones, and it's about a guy who basically loses it. That power, to a point, just corrupted his sanity. And the big news with Mayweather this week is obviously not inside the ring, but I found this to be funny in a lot of ways, that the Rockman brothers are now suing Mayweather, alleging everything, and shocker, Mayweather lied to the Nevada Commission. Boy, next thing you know, they'll be telling me there's no Santa Claus.
Yeah, I saw that.
Well,
that,
when you look at it, too, that nobody investigated it. Nobody really, that was covering the hearing said, well, wait a minute, why didn't you guys ask for the tape? Why wasn't he sworn in? Why wasn't it an official hearing? What was the purpose of that hearing? Was somebody dropping off somebody's laundry? Or I don't really understand, because it seemed very simple. It's what Floyd was saying was true. He could provide video footage of, the raw footage of everything they shot, and they could show, here's the point where they did the round break, this is everything surrounding it. This is going to be an interesting case, and I don't think it just is an indictment of Floyd and the behavior going on at that gym. I think it also speaks to, the commission and how bad they are.
And you know what? The enabling of Showtime. I mean, here is a company, this multi-million dollar corporation who was thrown under the bus, and they have not said a word to rebuke the outright lies of Floyd Mayweather. Now, how do you think those production people feel at this point?
Exactly. And then also, has anyone been able to confirm the actual pay-per-view buys for Maidana 2, Floyd Maidana 2?
No, and I think Showtime is out of the business of announcing numbers because, quite frankly, I think it's embarrassing for them. You know, I've seen as high as 920, 950, and as low as 700. And as they say, Warren, oftentimes the truth is probably right in the middle.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's all I had, guys. You're still doing a fantastic job. And like I said, I look forward to my Mondays for the show.
All right, Warren, thank you very much and keep listening.
Thank you.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. And if you want to question us via Twitter, you do so at SteveUCNLive, at Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe, who's next?
347, you're live on the next round. 347. Wow. All right. Moving on to 818. You're live on the next round. 818.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Steve Gabe, how you doing?
Good. What's going on?
Not much, man. I just wanted to comment on the fight. I was actually there this past weekend. I mean, what a great atmosphere, just mingling with the fans and everything. Like you guys have said, I've never seen Mexican fans get behind a fighter that's not Mexican. I was talking to the guy next to me, and I told him the only other thing that Triple G could have done to really appeal to the Mexican fans would be, I mean, if he walked out to the ring with, some Mexican music, some mariachi music, it would have been over.
No, listen, that may be next, but I'll say one thing. It was really interesting the way they walked into the ring. They didn't take the short A to B route. They took the scenic route around the whole perimeter of the lower bowl. I mean, it almost seemed like a pre-victory lap before the televised execution. And I don't think this particular event could have gone any better for Golovkin. They got a huge reception. Every seat was sold. I don't know what the television ratings are going to be. I have a feeling that the Notre Dame thriller against Florida State probably ate into the audience. But I don't think there's any doubt about it. There is no fighter, in my view, that has come so far in such a short time in the last 2 years than Gennady Golovkin.
Yeah, absolutely. The only other thing I saw or I wanted to talk about was you know, I was satisfied with the overall event, not so much the fight itself. I would have preferred to appreciate Golovkin's work a little bit more. You know, I think personally, I think Rubio kind of took the easy way out, felt the power, and just didn't want to be in there longer than he had to.
There's no doubt about that. And here's another thing, guys. I think Rubio tried to game the system. I mean, they made the 30-day weigh-in with the WBC. They made the 7-day weigh-in. And I think that they took a calculated risk by trying to come in a little bit heavier for a little bit more cushion. But guess what? It didn't matter.
Yeah, hey, I mean, you're welcome. I think, you know, this is something, you know, talking about the Mayweather and you know, lying to the commission, allegedly. In this case, you know, the California commission or the Nevada commission, I think for some of these, they need to take a look at what's going on with Robert Garcia and his fighters, not making weight in big fights. What's going on up there? Maybe, you know, just an inspection, check them out. Who's doing the conditioning for your guys? What is the problem in each of these cases? I'm not saying anything's going on, but people are missing weight. So that's what's going on. And I think the commission should get involved with that and find out. I mean, these are, you know, I don't know, maybe they left the weight on or what. Maybe he blew up too much between fights. It's hard, you know, hard to say. He is a kind of a rangy guy. But it seems to be a trend, wouldn't you say?
I think when it happens more than twice in a concentration, I mean, because it used to be the line, well, that's just Brandon Rios. Well, it's more than just Brandon Rios now. The proof is in the pudding. Yeah. It's out there. You know, listen, he had a couple of months. He knew. He's not a late replacement. He didn't get 10 days notice here. I believe that the press conference for this fight took place way back in August. So there was plenty of time here for Marco Antonio Rubio to do his job. And guess what? I get the sense that Rubio, when he comes back, Gabe, he's not moving up to super middleweight. Really, he's not. So
no.
It's not like a guy bursting at the seams waiting to move up to 168. Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines. 347-215-7598.
787, you're live on the next round. 787. Just very quiet out there. 714, you're live on the next round. 714.
Hey, guys, it's Lenny the Fight Smith. How are you doing?
Okay, now Lenny the Fight Smith actually made an appearance. So, Lenny, you turned down a lot of proceeds. You could have turned a nice profit here and flipped some dollars. Was it worth it when it was all said and done?
Yeah, I think it was. I think, you know what? My wife was really excited about going, even though she wanted me to sell the tickets. She was excited about going. She's glad she went. She enjoyed the atmosphere, the event kind of feel of it. We were in the first row, so when Golovkin did his walk around the entire floor, he walked right by her. She was really excited about it. So, yeah, it was worth it.
And you know what? Just tell your wife. Don't worry about it. You can just buy 3 or 4 less pairs of shoes to make up for it. And I'm sure that'll go over very well with her.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, I brought her into the fold. I think she's a fan now. I think she's a boxing fan herself. So it worked out. But, I mean, I don't know if I would pay for it again, though. I don't know if I would. I mean, now I've seen it. I've been there. I've been a part of it. If he fought another guy around the same level, same quality level, I'm paying for two rounds. I paid, I think it was like, they were like $200. The floor tickets were $200, $100 a round. A little pricey for me.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, I've seen a few people say that on Twitter that they, you know, it would depend on the opponent, that it was fun. And it's like, for me, like, I felt like Curtis Stevens was going to go some rounds, and I you know, wanted to go to New York, so I went to that fight. For this fight, I didn't really have any interest. I was like, this isn't going to go long. Donaire Walters would be cool, but it wasn't enough for me to travel to the fight. And I can understand that, you know. I think the next fight, it's got to be, if they're in Los Angeles, they got to go Staples Center. They got to go something bigger, or maybe the soccer field, an outdoor event for Golovkin. You think that's possible,
Lenny,
to go outdoors with him?
Well, you know, listen, if you're going to go outdoors like you did with Steve Forbes, Oscar De La Hoya, and I think they drew right around 28,000, that's going to have to be Chavez. We have to be realistic. But here's 2 points. After the fight at the press conference was a gentleman that I'm very fond of and very friendly with, Dan Beckerman. Now, he's actually the CEO and the head of AEG, which runs the StubHub Center and the Staples Center. And he made it very clear to me, he goes, Steve, this guy is a part of our plans. He may not be the Lakers or the Kings, but he's one of our franchises now. And we want him back on our properties as much as possible. He was absolutely thrilled. So that's one thing. The other thing is, I think as it relates to Golovkin's matchmaking, Lenny and Gabe, if you can't get that marquee blue chipper like a Frotch or a Chavez or anybody else, I think it's very, very vital. And this is what Tom Loeffler understood this past weekend. You better have a quality co-feature. So let's say you did Golovkin against another Rubio type of guy, then you better get some sort of undercard fight featuring, let's say, a Roman Gonzalez or an Oscar Valdez or Verdejo on the East Coast. Or let's say you do a rematch between Estrada and Valoria and really wrap it around the event where you have a real fight and then you have Golovkin. So there's ways you can couch this. But, Lenny, I do agree with you. You could do it the first time as an introduction. As you settle in, I think there is a natural expectation, which is very, very fair, that, hey, we want to see better opposition.
I think he gets an elite guy in 2015. I think he's almost at that point where the risk is going to outweigh the reward, or the reward is going to outweigh the risk for certain guys. Not for, I don't think for Ward, because Ward's going to have to be a B-side against them, and not for Cotto, because Cotto's going to get killed. But a guy like Canelo or a guy like Chavez Jr., I can see them making that choice and taking the payday, win or lose, against Golovkin in 2015. I mean, especially Canelo. Canelo, I think, can take another loss and be like Oscar and still be fine legacy-wise and still have general public Mexican fans going to all his fights and watching his pay-per-view.
You know, I'll say one thing. If you're a hardcore Gennady-Golovkin fight fan, we love to see our guys win. And sometimes it doesn't even matter the level of opposition. Now, Lenny, if you're more of a neutral, casual fan, like maybe your wife who's settled into being a fight fan, it does matter. But, you know, I still remember when Chavez, the real Chavez, not Fredo Corleone right now, but when JC Superstar was at his best, when he was racking up 75, 80, 85 victories, I remember when he would win even against C-level guys in tune-ups. Guess what? The Mexican fans were still incredibly excited just by having their guy perform and blow somebody out.
Yeah, I think Golovkin is helping himself big time by fighting often. I mean, even if he's fighting bums, at least he's fighting often. At least there's going to be another one to look forward to in 3 months where he could potentially be fighting somebody better, somebody bigger. I mean, at least he's active. I mean, that's what's keeping fans interested. I mean, there was an article on Golovkin in The Atlantic today.
Interesting. All I know is Golovkin's last 2-3 fights, and when he scored these knockouts, it's been on Deadspin. And Deadspin's not exactly Ring Magazine as it relates to covering boxing on a regular basis, Lenny.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, with Tito on that run where he just kept going. I mean, there was names certainly in there. But like, you know, throwing in the Mamadou Thiam fight, which I'm sure most people weren't picking Thiam to win that fight, maybe to push Tito a little bit. But you got to there's no substitute for activity. You can't, you know, I tweeted this today, you can't build a brand sitting on the bench. You can get paid not to fight. You can make some good money, I guess, doing that. Like Quillen, apparently, they've been paid a substantial sum not to, to lose the title. But that doesn't really engender you to the fans. fighting often, winning, and hopefully, like, you know, Golovkin's been doing it in spectacular fashion, especially when you're supposed to. That's the way you do it.
Lenny, is there anything else we could do for you?
Just want to say Walters was a beast, man. He is terrifying. I would not want to be near him. I would want to touch him with a 10-foot stick if I were in his weight class.
I think he's a dangerous guy. I called him Mini Mike McCallum, and I'm telling you, I think he is the veritable dark horse at 126. I want to see a lot more. The thing that's impressive to me, Lenny, his first couple of fights under the top-ranked banner, he did what he was supposed to, which is blow out guys that were smaller, older, or not as good. Still beating Donaire, even at this stage, that's still a brand-name guy under a huge spotlight. And you know what? He didn't shrink away from it. Anyway, listen, Lenny,
hey,
good seeing you this weekend, and we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Yeah, good seeing you guys. Thanks.
All right, top of the hour, we'll go through some news and notes from the boxing world. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, at SteveUCNLive, at Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe, let's go to the next call.
All right, in the 323, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Mike from L.A.
Mike, welcome
what's
aboard.
Up?
How you doing?
Hey, it's good. It's good to call in. I'm a big fan. I listen every single week. Just wanted to talk a little bit about the weekend. I was there, and you know, it was fantastic. Everyone's said this already, but a couple things. You know, all the other cards I've been to there were Showtime cards. This one, the HBO card, had the big screens, which is totally awesome to have the replay in between the rounds, which, you know, the last couple Showtime cards I had been to, they don't have that. So that's just like a little note on the production side, which made it fun. You know, the thing about Triple G is the sky's the limit because he's the complete package. You know, and he's got the smile, the great attitude, but he's so workmanlike. And you know, the switch that he flips when he gets in there, it's awesome, and everybody can sort of relate to, you know, the good guy as opposed to, you know, the bad guy. Everyone's tired of the, like, look how much money I have, look at all this, look at that. Like, times are tough. You know, he just gets in there and he's like, you know what, I fight, I love to fight, I'm here for the fans. And you know, some of it's marketing, you know, oh, Mexican style, blah blah blah, but he smiles. He seems like a nice guy, and you know, everybody's into that, you know?
Let me just tell you what I thought the weigh-in, Gabe, which is really interesting. There's probably like 100 or so people. I mean, Carson's not the easiest place to go to on a work day, even on a Friday. And this is when I knew the fans were with them, regardless of ethnicity, if they were Mexican or not. Rubio could have been there for an hour. He may have signed a few autographs. No one really noticed him, and he missed weight, so he had to get out of there. And I put a video up on it on Instagram, and I took a few pictures. Every single Mexican that was there that had something to be signed got something signed by Golovkin, who stayed at least a good, I'd say, 15, 20 minutes after the weigh-in. And I'm just looking at this, and again, it reiterated my point. I've never seen a non-Mexican fighter who was embraced by the Mexicans quite like this guy.
I mean, you have to go back, you know. I mean, Roberto Duran, I mean, I guess if you go way, way back. But in the modern age, I mean, Trinidad was, you know, Puerto Rican. They're not going to really – I mean, I think maybe now that he's retired, people revere him, you know, the style translated. But it was you know, he had a Puerto Rican fan base. You're right. It's just unusual, you know. I'd love to see somebody do a video asking Mexican boxing fans where Kazakhstan is. Just, you know, throwing that out there.
Hey, one more question.
What's that?
So, you know, obviously the talk is bigger and better venues for Triple G, which is great for him. It kind of sucks for the fans. I mean, you know, at the StubHub, it's the best place to go. You know, most people say that it's probably the best place to see live boxing. And I usually sit in the same spot, the first row, right outside the you know, the lower bowl, the very first seat. So it's up a little bit higher than being on the floor. You can see everything. And my ticket was only $105 this time. All the other times, it's normally right around $2 or $225. you know, I think when he goes to Staples, you know, those seats, obviously, they're going to become way more expensive. So it'll be curious to see the draw, you know, because those prices, those tickets were cheap for this fight all the way across the board.
There's no doubt. And this, again, this is a testament to Tom Loeffler understanding what he has and working in volume. And I talked to Tom a lot. He said, Steve, I know what we have. We know the marketing, and we know where we stand. One day will he headline a big Las Vegas show where all you fans will not be able to get any of his tickets and be disgruntled like it's a Pacquiao fight? Yeah, but for now, they are trying to appeal to the public. And it was a fun event if you went there. I listen, I'm with you. I wish there were 6-7 rounds instead of just two. I mean, I've been to the last two Golovkin fights. I've seen less than 15 minutes. And there's a part of me that says, I want to see more, but I understand that's the nature of boxing. But you're right. And another issue is, when they built that tennis stadium, I don't think they realized just how good it was going to be for boxing. Now, when you start going into these other multi-purpose venues like the Staples Center, which is built really for hockey, you're right. The sight lines are not quite the same, and you'll be paying more for it.
Yeah, well, you know, it was an awesome night, so I'll be at every Triple G card that's in L.A. for sure. So keep up the good work, guys. Listen every week. Thanks.
All right, thank you very much. We'll get back to your calls. Jump on in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, NBC Sports Network is wrapping up its run with main events, and from the 2300 Arena in Philadelphia, the USSS keeps steaming along. Steve Cunningham with a TKO in 7 over Natu Vicinia, and then junior lightweight Edner Cherry with a second-round stoppage over Osamamanu Akaba. Gabe, here's the thing about Cunningham. I like Steve. He's got very good skills. He's got a great story. He's a nice guy, but Gabe, he just seems a little brittle to really be a full-fledged heavyweight.
Yeah, I mean, he's always, he kind of gasses a little bit. He gets caught with some shots. He gets shaken a little bit. It makes for very exciting TV. That was a fun fight, you know. But yeah, I get the sense that he's just, you know, a guy with some skill that can step to him, clock him with a 1-2 or a jab or, you know, even just like a single shot and then grab him and lean on him without taking too much in return is gonna be a problem. But that said, I just love watching Steve Cunningham fight, man. I mean, you know you're in for some drama. Lead rights, you know, the hard jabs. I think he was doing really well for a while there, and he kind of hit the wall, hit the floor, you know, comes back in dramatic fashion. But it wasn't exactly like he was beating, you know, David Tua in there in his prime. But still, it made for great TV, and I can't help but wondering what's going to become of this series out of main event's hands.
And Gabe, Edner Cherry has always been one of my personal favorites, and I've said this before. 20, 25 years ago, he would have been a Tuesday night fight staple, a guy that would have found consistent, steady work and given us consistently steady, good action fights, may have picked up a belt or two. Edner Cherry at 130, I think, is physically strong and as athletic as anyone, even at his age of 32. You know what? Call me crazy. I'd make him 50-50 right now against this current version of one of my other favorites, Orlando Salido. Am I nuts?
Oh, no, not at all. I think the cherry bomb, that's a great, great fight for him. I think he'd have to fight for it. I think he'd be, you know, caught a couple times or tested a little bit. But I think if he figured out how to deal with, you know, the wide-winging sneaky right of Salido, I think he'd have a big chance to win and possibly win by stoppage. We've talked about the cherry bomb before. He's just kind of this guy that just hasn't really been given quite the chance that he should have. I'd love to see him make a late career run. That's a hell of a fight. That'd be a really fun fight.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, has he had his problems at 140? Yes, facing a slick boxer in Paulie Malignaggi, the highly acclaimed Tim Bradley, who's the last guy to beat him. But at 35-30, I'm just telling you, the cherry bomb, he can detonate, and I think he's dangerous. He's athletic. He's a workhorse. He works hard. He's an honest guy. Here's hoping that Russell Peltz can take him places. I think there needs to be spots in this game for the likes of Edner Cherry. Gabe, December 20th, and we got a tweet there from our good friend Javier Gorbea. Rios Alvarado 3, they're trying to have it in Denver, but Mike Alvarado went Mike Alvarado, and there's a legal issue now, and Bob Arum tells me today that if they could work it out with the lawyers and he's free, that they're still going to work on the fight. Gabe, it's pretty clear. Mike Alvarado is the mile-high version of Kelly Pavlik, isn't he?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, dude, you know, like a tiny Chris Areola. You know, a guy that, when he's got time on his hands, finds a way to get into trouble. You know, he's not getting, Chris isn't getting in trouble with the law. He's just other kinds of trouble, trouble with pizza. I don't understand why Mike can't get out of his own way, but it's just the nature of the beast. It's probably what makes him a fighter on some level, you know. I hope the fight can be made, though. I think it's the, you know, last chance saloon for the winner of that fight.
Yeah, those guys are what I call peanut butter and jelly. They just go together. Gabe, so it's a done deal, right? They're going to fight for the WBC heavyweight title. Burmain Stiverne, Deontay Wilder. Book it, right? I mean, that seems to be the word. I don't know what to believe anymore at this point in, when it comes to certain guys and mandatory defenses and non-purse bids or purse bids. Do I believe in Stiverne Wilder?
I am not going to bet anything on. I wouldn't bet one of my cats on that fight happening. I don't know at this point. You know, it's hard to say. I don't think the Wilder side wants it. It just doesn't feel that way. They think that they're looking to be a brand without having to get the danger. That seems to be the MO of Al Haymon. I'll believe it when I see it. When you know they announce it and have a press conference, then we'll know.
Okay, I think that's the best way to look at it. Seeing is believing. And sometimes, as it relates to certain people in this business, that ain't enough. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on the deck?
Let's see. In the 805, you're live on the next round. 805.
Hey, Steve, Gabe, how you guys doing?
Good. Who is this?
What's up?
This is Chris Jay giving a call up here in Ventura, Oxnard area.
Oh, well, welcome aboard.
How you doing, guys? Hey, I was
doing
at the Triple G's fight, and I just wanted to tell you my little story. I was on press row getting ready to cover the fight, and as soon as I saw that Triple G was going to make that big ring walk, as much as I enjoy staring at Dan Raphael's back during a ring walk, I said, I just need to be with the people. So I bolted from my seat, I fired up, and mainly just to get the experience, because there was an energy in the air that I really wanted to feel in the right place. And I got up there, and lo and behold, when he did that ring walk, and he came around, it felt like a professional wrestling match. People were leaning down from the bowl just to try and touch him. It was just a sensational moment that I can only really equate to maybe going to an Iron Mike fight when he was getting hot. It's just there was a different feeling in that building. The anticipation was palpable, so to speak.
No, you know what's interesting? When I saw him come in, because I was watching one of the monitors in front of me, and I look up, and he's not in the ring. And I'm just like, where did he go? And then all of a sudden, I turn around, he's right behind me. And the thing that it's an indelible image to me, is that every single fan, it seemed like for the first 30 rows, had their phones out trying to capture that image.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, wow, this really is something here. It really is. It's an intangible, but I think we should just enjoy it. Listen, our job is to be critical and tell, hey, he didn't beat Carlos Monzon. He didn't beat Harry Greb. But for what that night was, that was good for boxing.
Yeah, it was remarkable. And the other thing I'd make an observation is, he, you know, the first person that he thanked was the fans. He cut Kellerman off, and he thanked the fans. And it's so refreshing to hear a guy not thank Al Haymon or God or HBO. I mean, it was remarkable. He has an uncanny perception, whether he's being told to or he understands it personally, about the relationship that he's created. And it's remarkable. There's a connection that's almost cross-country, cross-generational, cross any racism lines. I mean, people just like this guy, and he understands how to work with a fan base.
Gabe, I've known Gennady on a professional level since the time he's come out here 2 years ago. Gabe, I can honestly tell you the guy has not changed. He's still that affable, amiable, very nice individual. And, Gabe, here's my hope,
yeah,
is that he never changes.
Yeah. He always would just show up to you know, the kind of like low-key press conferences at a little restaurant here or there, and he'd just, like, kind of just show up in a T-shirt and jeans, maybe flip-flops, and just a smile and want to talk to everybody, tell his entire story, and stay there till, you know, you were done. And the last reporter got everything that he needed. And he treats the fans that way. I think they really get it. You know, that you're kind of going uphill. He's from Kazakhstan. You know, how are you going to – you're not going to market to that market. You got to do it some other way. And they really, you know, you understand learning English slowly but surely, mixing in some Spanish was marketing genius, really nice touch. And I think it's generally good people. You know, Abel Sanchez is a good guy. He's one of the good people in the sport. Has that gym up there, and there's a real camaraderie. All of it, you can't fake that. You can throw money at the screen and you can make a reality TV show, but in the end, you know, the art speaks for the artist, and Triple G stuff is really, it's the latest stuff. Everybody wants it. It's only going to appreciate over time and as it becomes more difficult for him, if it becomes that way.
So the question is very simple. I know you had a press pass, but anytime Golovkin fights, are you like me? You want to be there to witness this ride?
I think it's part of history in a very strange way, and I get that feeling so little as a reporter and as a writer that it's addicting. It was nice to go to a fight where, okay, Guerrero, it's StubHub, what are we going to see? Oh, we got lucky. It's so nice to finally think, like, I'm actually expecting something as opposed to getting lucky. It was a really remarkable sensation. I'm in. I mean, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, and I got to give you credit, Gabe, too, because I thought maybe you were a little bitter because you stole your Triple G moniker, Golden Gate Gabe, and you were just saying it was a showcase fight. But I thought of you at the fight. You were absolutely right. You called that. That was a showcase put on display, and it went exactly how you thought. I thought Rubio was durable. I mean, I'm up here in the 805, so, you know, sometimes the scent of Garcia lingers heavy, and I think, oh, he's going to give him a run. But it was everything you thought. I was really, really impressed by that call.
You know, last year, and I've been to a couple Ward fights, and the thing that's striking about Ward fights is they're no fun. They're dreary. They're boring.
Yeah.
And you're kind of there, and you're like, it just kind of shows you how worthless pound-for-pound ratings are, because you're saying, who the hell cares? This is the entertainment business. And all we're doing is covering boxing. It's not all that serious. And for us journalists, we're not covering the White House. We're not covering a war. And so let's not take any of this too seriously. So have some fun out there and try to have some memorable moments. And last year when I was out there in Ontario, I said to myself, literally, you had to pay me to be out here, because I wouldn't come out here on my own volition. And that's the truth. I know some don't like me for that, but when Golovkin fights, I want to be there. I want to be there for the whole scene because it's fun.
Yeah, and the last note I would make, the only thing that K2 did wrong with that promotion, and you were there, Steve, I think you can attest to this, because they did everything right, but my God, did they blow it on the merchandising. They had a single Triple G hat that was selling like hotcakes. I watched person after person go up asking for T-shirts, and they had nothing. I just don't know how that ball got dropped.
I have begged Tom Lawford, for his own sake and my own sanity on Twitter, stop leaving money on the table. And this is another thing that I mentioned on Twitter. I really think there's more bootleg merchandise of Gennady Golovkin right now than Malcolm X stuff in 2001 or You Can't Touch This. I saw at least 10 different T-shirts of Gennady Golovkin that were made by fans or bought. It was really the unlicensed apparel, and some of it you're like, wow, that's a classy look, and there's something here. And I really hope K2 next year, and I told this to Tom via text, to Tom, you really need to work on the merchandising, because it's the one fighter that people really want to associate with.
I don't leave a fight too often saying I want to rock a T-shirt of a fighter, especially as being part of the media. But, hey, I left there on a high. I was ready to sport a Triple G shirt. I just didn't think it would be a good move for a white guy to have a Mexican flag triple hat that says Mexican style walking around Oxnard. It just didn't feel like the right fashion call, you know.
Yeah.
Especially if you're going to be around the Robert Garcia Boxing Academy.
Yeah. So, anyhow, my last thought is, you know, could you imagine Chris Algieri printing up hats with a Mexican flag on the back? I just don't think it would go the same way. I mean, Triple G, he crosses races. It's a wonderful thing.
All right. Listen, appreciate the call. We'll keep in touch, okay?
Take care, guys. Have a good one.
Absolutely. We still
you
have
too,
15
too.
Minutes here. Steve Kim, Gabriel Montoya on the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network, 347-215-7598. Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines.
In the 703, you're live on the next round. 703.
What up, guys? What's going on?
Good, what's going on?
What's up, man?
This week from Longmont. This show so far, I'm just kind of sad that I call at 8 o'clock Eastern time and realize that you're about done. But anyway, good card on Saturday. I really enjoyed the fight. I'm kind of pissed off about Rubio. I don't know. I guess he made up his mind after getting hit a couple of times that it was not worth the risk fighting the fight that he was supposed to fight. And I don't know. I just it didn't look too good, and it did a disservice to Golovkin, which I think he would have done that anyway in the long run. But I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of disgusted about that. But the point I really wanted to make is I'm a boxing fan. I mean, I'm not an expert. I'm an accountant. That's what I do for a living. But I've been watching film about Golovkin, and I don't know. I truly feel this guy I'm a believer, but I believe this guy can be outboxed. And I don't know, call me crazy, but I think a guy like Quilling or somebody that actually can move and have a good jab will give him problems. And that's the type of fight I want to see next for Golovkin. And I also like Hopkins against Kovalev. Again, call me crazy, but that's another guy I believe he can be outboxed and has had the right matchmaking up to date. Good for him, but I'm looking forward to that. And I don't know, was that show on NBC part of Al Haymon?
No, it was main events. That's why we actually got some entertainment value out of it.
Yeah, I think, you know, Kovalev is, if you're going to fight him and for Bernard Hopkins, I think now would be the time to do it. I know he's been blowing through guys, but he doesn't have that full fight experience, you know, the knockdown, drag out, full 12 round fight, where he's really had to, you know, have peaks and valleys and reversals and then ultimately triumphing. And Hopkins has, you know, all the experience of all time. So, you know, he's being 86 years old and like over 1,000 fights in the ring. You know, there's nothing Bernard hasn't seen. It's not a crazy pick to pick Bernard Hopkins. If he can take the power, or if Kovalev is having trouble landing the shots, it could be a long night for him.
Nice. Hey, listen, and that guy, Donaire, man, if he can do something, he has fights, a couple of fights left in the tank. The thing is, when I look at this guy, I kind of look at Alexis Arguello in the sense that they're both gifted fighters. They can crack. But the thing is, they already, I don't know, outlive their natural talents against smaller guys. And he just needs to rely more on his boxing skills. Like, whenever he was jabbing and going through the body and all of that, he did pretty good. When he got away from that, he started getting caught with shots that he shouldn't have gotten caught with. And I don't know. I mean, it'll be sad to see him leaving the sport. I mean, he's an exciting fighter. And in fact, he was able to, from what I saw, he was able to hurt Walters at the end of the second round, which Sturz even acknowledged during the fight interview that Donaire surprised him with the speed and caught him with a couple of good shots. So I don't know why Donaire, you know, he doesn't even feel like he fit in. I just think he has some technical flaws that he has to work with.
Well,
First of all,
I've seen Alexis Arguello, and Nonito Donaire is no Alexis Arguello. Bottom line is he needs to move down in weight, and his technical flaws have been evident for a while, but I think they've been masked by very good matchmaking and a size disparity that was always in his favor. And I think he's got some hard decisions to make. And we've talked about this last week, Gabe. If you want to train yourself, I think it's really hard to improve yourself from a fundamental perspective.
That's absolutely true. If you're not training year-round, I mean, I think you can you know, there's, I think you need to peak for a training camp, but you should be in the gym working all the time. It's your lab, you know. This is a craft. You watch Bernard Hopkins and those cool videos they do on, like, Ring TV, where he's, you know, showing how to do different punches or different techniques. And that's just years and years of training and craft. You know, it's very subtle stuff, real fascinating to watch. And there's a reason why he's still around, you know, and it's consistency. He trains year-round, stays in shape. And I don't think Daenerys had that discipline, much less the discipline to just stay in one spot for an entire camp. It's been a long time. He's, you know, flying. I think really for him, the peak was Montiel. Then they get the house in Vegas, start living the life a little bit. And it was, you know, despite the fact that he was winning, it was only a matter of time before he got matched to a point where he wouldn't be able to just kind of get by being Nonito Donaire and being like at 80%. He hasn't been 100% since Montiel, and he finally, you know, either you pay the price or the price pays you a call, and that's what happened.
Yeah, Louie, we got to get running, okay?
All right, guys, carry on. Thanks.
All right, we got 10 minutes, 347-215-7598. Gabe?
In the 860, you're live on the next round, 860. You've been very patient.
What's up, guys? How you doing? It's CQ.
Good. What's going on?
Hey, what's up? I definitely want to talk about the two fights. Actually, they're both shocking to me, but the way they ended, I thought they were going to end a little bit later, but I give all credit to Walters. I think what will speak volumes to me in the fight is where he was able to take Nonito Donaire's best punch, and then the next round come back to dominate. You know, his jab was just killing Donaire all night, and I think he has an awkward way to, his punches are kind of like hidden, you know, the way he evades punches and he awkwardly throws his shots. Kind of when he caught him with the uppercut, and then the way he ended the fight, he kind of saw the left hook coming, and then he dropped the right hand over the top. I think his style is very awkward, and he has power behind those punches, and I think that makes him very, you know, a dangerous fighter at 126. And his size, you just saw his strength, and he came up in the fight with complete confidence. You know, he's very hungry all through the fight. And like I said, when he got hurt after the second round, he showed his hunger within coming into the next round, the third round, and dominating Donaire. And I think Donaire just relies too much on his left hook. He needs to set things up, a jab. You know, just he really needs to work on some things, but I think his confidence is definitely gone. And I give all the credit to Walters. I agree with you, though, Steve. I think it'll be a dangerous fight versus Johnny Gonzalez. I would love to see it, but I think that's a dangerous fight. And I think Lomachenko, the combination of his foot and hand speed may be a little bit too much for Walters, but I think Walters is one of the best featherweights in the division.
You know, the one thing, though, this version of Johnny Gonzalez is a lot slower than before. He's still a heavy-handed guy, but remember, he's facing a young lion now. It's not Jorge Arce. I would actually make Walters, the Axeman, a slight favorite over this version of Johnny Gonzalez if they fought 3 months from today. Just my opinion.
Okay, and I would like to talk about the Triple G fight. I mean, when I first watched the fight a couple years ago, I was just a little bit like, I wanted to see what this guy was all about, but I'm definitely a believer now. I mean, his way of positioning himself to, you know, he gets in great position to throw those power shots. And the way he landed that left hook on the side of the head, you tell Rubio just didn't want it anymore. But I really think this guy, his power is very real. And I always try to compare his type of power to Julian Jackson, which I think Julian Jackson had more snap on his shots, but I think Triple G definitely has that thudding type power where he hits you anywhere and it's just over. I would love to see him fight maybe somebody like a Korobov. I know they have like history in the amateurs, but I think Korobov might be able to do pretty well because of his style. He's a southpaw. He's pretty good with his legs, and I think he has pretty good boxing ability. I want to see when he fights Andy Lee. And I want to see Triple G fight him next.
Yeah, you know what? I think there's a reason why HBO bought this fight. It's either going to be on the 13th or the 20th. And listen, they didn't buy it just to buy it. Part of being a network that makes a commitment to a fighter like Gennady Golovkin is then you have to make a commitment to getting opponents. So that's a fight, especially for a major belt, because these belts are important. I still remember, Bernard Hopkins didn't get legitimized as a middleweight champion until he won all those belts in 2001. Just my personal opinion, I believe Gennady Golovkin has every right to try and do the exact same thing. CT, we got to get running, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Gabe, let's try to fit in a few more calls here.
All right. In the 585, you're live on the next round.
Good God. I've been on hold for an hour and a half.
Oh, blame Gabe. Totally on Gabe.
Totally on
Gabe. But two questions. Oh, I'm up here in State Farm in Rochester, New York, as you say.
Steve. Okay.
First question. Who, out of all the big names mentioned for Triple G in 2015, what do you guys think is the most likely? We'll say.
Oh, that's a good question.
Gabe, I got to be honest with you. I don't know. We got to see. First of all, I'm assuming Canelo Cotto is going to happen. Let's see if Froch Chavez can happen. And at that point, guess what? Those guys are tied up for at least the first 6 months of 2015. So I really could not give an honest answer on that.
I mean, the biggest names might be Martin Murray, the Korobov Lee, or, maybe David Lemieux, like if he pulls out, the Rosado. Or maybe Rosado, if he looks spectacular in beating Lemieux. I don't think it gets much bigger next year. Maybe by the end of the year, but there's not a lot of reason to face him right now. He's not penning in anybody. And then you got the whole Heyman, universe that's not going to want to deal with him either. Some people had said, close to the sanctioning bodies, that they're trying to, all four of them want to get together and try to funnel towards having one champion per division. Like they'd still have, the four different sanctioning bodies would have their world champion. But they want to try to do like a world super champion. I don't know how soon that's going to happen, but I think if it starts to move that way within the next year, Gennady would certainly benefit from it. But right now, he's just got to chop wood and carry water, because I don't think anybody, despite what he's building, has a true reason to step in with it. It's just depressing.
And your second question.
For Heyman's first NBC card a week after the Super Bowl, who do you see on that card?
I think it'll be some combination of Peter Quillen and Danny Jacobs, and maybe Danny Garcia. That seems to be the word. And outside of that, I'll be honest, I really haven't heard all that much.
All right, thank you.
All right, and
yeah,
let's
no problem.
Take one more call, Gabe, before we wrap it up.
Okay. I'm getting a weird direct message. I'll tell you about that after the show. These calls are moving all around. In the 714, you're live on the next round. I'll try you again, 714. Okay. In the 787, you're live on the next round. 787.
Guys, do you hear me?
Javier, you got about 2 minutes. Make it quick.
One quick question. One of the fights that has been talked about to make it a triple header in December 6th is Frankie Gomez versus Tomas Dulorme. If that fight does get made, who do you make the favorite in that fight?
Believe it or not, I like the pit bull, Frankie Gomez, and I'm glad they're making this fight. I know that there was talk from the very beginning of Gomez kind of making his move on this particular show. Here's the thing. Dulorme might be a little bit more technically sound, more seasoned, but Gabe, I don't think Dulorme catches well. And the one thing about Gomez, he can kick.
I don't know how far the guy can go, but yeah. I kind of just wonder, how much discipline he can put together, how much technique. I'm still not seeing it. He can punch, but I want to know what else he can do.
You know what, though? Technically, Gabe, is he any different all that much than the guy that beat him already, Louis Abreu? Aren't they both wild swinging guys with heavy hands?
Yeah. You're right. I mean, I think it's kind of on the table for both guys. But you're right. No, it's not much different.
And one last question, guys. I know Golovkin sells on his own, and that was proven this week. But if Korobov beats Lee, and they make Canelo Cotto, do you think Tom Lawler or HBO will actually consider, hey, let's put Korobov and Golovkin on that undercard so the pay-per-view audience gets to know Golovkin?
No. No. He's not. I'm sorry. He's not Leo Santa Cruz, and the budget wouldn't call for it. He's at that stage now. They're not making that much. Trust me, they can't do it. Listen, Javier, we got to get going. We're almost out of time here. On behalf of Gabriel Montoya and the rest of the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network, this is Steve Kim saying till the next round. Goodbye, everybody.
Thank you, guys.